Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today is the first episode we've ever done with two guests. Today I'm joined by Justin and Kate Small. They are probably best known for their wolf hunting and their wolf management and all that stuff up in Idaho. So we have a really good discussion about all the wolf reintroduction and stuff and how to manage wolves and the hunting of wolves and all that stuff, which seems to be a hot topic and kind of a controversial topic in the hunting world going on right now in a few different states. So definitely check out this podcast. I think hunters were kind of all on the same page about wolf management, but if you have any friends that might be on the fence about it, definitely share this podcast with them, and hopefully they'll from there check out both Justin and Kate's Instagram and see kind of what goes on with the wolf hunting and wolf management plans and all that stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast with them. I certainly did. Before we get into that, if you guys want to check out the podcast on social media, it's barely_backcountry_podcast. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Again, give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, especially share this podcast. Again, wolf hunting is kind of a controversial topic right now, but it's a very important topic, especially for those of us that enjoy hunting elk and deer. The wolves definitely crush that population. So share this podcast as much as you can. Without any further ado, I'll get you guys into this podcast with Justin and Kate Small. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today is the first episode that we actually have two guests on. Today we have Justin and Kate Small, who are mostly known for their wolf hunting and their wolf academy that they got coming up. But as if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what you guys do.
Yeah, obviously Justin Small, like you said. I grew up hunting in the Idaho backcountry. Me and Kate seem to mostly, we hunt everything, but it seems like we're mostly known for hunting wolves and predators in general.
Definitely. And then Kate, what about you?
I actually grew up in Oregon and moved to Idaho about 10 years ago. And I was late to the game when it came to hunting and didn't get my start until I was about 19. Okay. But since then it's grown into a passion and kind of a lifestyle for us. So.
Nice. So Justin, we'll start with you first. How did you start hunting? Was that something did you like grew up hunting with your dad and all that, or did you kind of get into it a little bit later?
It was kind of survival for us. Like I was really dirt poor growing up, six kids on a cop salary. And so we did it mostly out of necessity. And, my dad and brother were hunters. I kind of joke around, call them the great white hunters. They don't hunt the way that I do now or whatever. But they used to go out and get it done every year. That was obviously when we had a much higher population of deer and elk. And, we used to go out and just, it was kind of then even being a youth hunter and stuff, we would shoot the first thing that we really had the opportunity to shoot. We weren't trophy hunters. Not that I am now by any means, but we weren't trophy hunters then. And just grew up doing it mostly for the food.
Nice. So you said you grew up in Idaho?
Yep. Cool. I grew up in Idaho, born and raised.
Nice. So when you were a kid, was it mostly like deer hunting, elk hunting, and then were you doing it a lot with a bow or with a rifle? Or what was your experience like growing up hunting?
I was pretty much deer and elk exclusively. We did a lot of bird hunting too. We used to have a lot of pheasants then. We used to do pheasant, quail, dove. I did, big game wise was just elk and deer and always with a rifle growing up. I didn't get into archery until I could buy my own bow, which was at like 18, 19.
Okay.
So
nice. 12 years ago. Did you do any predator hunting growing up, or is that something you got into later?
No, I just, when I was probably like 20, I just decided I had seen bears, but I had never had a tag to shoot one, and, realized the tag was like $10 and started looking into it and realized that you could bait bears. And so I just basically went for it one year, had no idea what I was doing. The first year that I did it, I baited bears, never had a bear come in when I was in the stand or anything like that. I had one maybe like really small bear that I didn't shoot, but never knew what I was doing. And then between that year and the year after that, I did a ton of research and kind of figured out how I wanted to do my stand the next year and figured out all the things or a lot of the things I was doing wrong. And then from then I just basically have shot a bear almost every year since then, since the following year, but maybe missing one or two years when I tried to get something too big for my britches. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I just, it took a little while for me to figure it out. And then, obviously we've done a lot of spot and stock in the last few years, but, yeah, to start out, it was just me by myself. I didn't know anyone that bear hunted at the time.
Yeah. So you did pretty much all your hunting in Idaho, or did you get out of state much and hunt, or?
No, I've like once or twice in Montana, like just deer or wolves, and that's pretty much it. I've pretty much spent all my time here in Idaho, other than, yeah, pretty much. Nice. That's pretty much it.
Nice. And then, Kate, what about you? How did you get started hunting? You said it was a little bit later in life, so how did that happen for you?
Growing up, my family didn't hunt, so I didn't. None of my friends were really into it, so I didn't have that exposure. But all through high school and in college, I played sports. And when that was over, I just kind of had the hunger to do something more, you know, kind of that competitive drive. And my mom married my stepdad when I was 19, and he was a hunter. Okay. And I was interested in it, so he took me out, and it just became this really awesome way, something for us to bond over, and I just fell in love with it.
Nice. So what were some of those first hunts that you went on, and how did those go?
The first couple ones were rough. I'm from Oregon, and that's where we were hunting, and man, it's crowded over there, and they've got a wolf problem, and Oregon's predator management is pretty poor. With all predators, bears and mountain lions, and wolves. So it was tough, but then I got my first muley. I think it took two seasons, and he's an older guy. So we weren't doing the hunting that Justin and I do now. So it was a little bit different, but it was just fun being out there. And so then I kind of built on that, and now hunting has taken over our lives.
Nice. At what point, and then why did you end up moving to Idaho out of Oregon?
I moved to Idaho about 10 years ago. I went to nursing school in Oregon at Oregon Health and Science University, and then my first job out of nursing school was in Boise. Okay. And so that's what brought me to Idaho.
Nice. So I'm guessing you guys were still both into hunting when you guys met, and then that's something you guys have continued to do together, it looks like, based off your social media.
Yes. Yeah. When we met, we were both into hunting, and then it was just, we realized it was just the most fun thing we could do together.
Right. How does it go hunting together? Because you often hear two different sides of it. It either goes really, really well hunting with your partner, or it's just a disaster. So how does that work for you guys?
I hope we might have two different answers, but but to me, I think we are the best version of a couple when we're on the mountain together. Mm-hmm. And so we just work really well together out there. I think when we're home, we kind of get bored and we need something to do. And when we're out there, we just flow really well.
Nice.
Justin.
It's terrible. it's good. I never thought that, to be honest, like if you had asked me in my younger years, if I'd go hunting with a girl, I would be like, no, like there's no way. But, no, Kate's a badass and carries her own out there. I think that's why it works. If I had to coddle somebody all the time, I don't think that it would work.
Yeah.
But you know, if you tell Kate to, you know, get the firewood for the teepee or whatever, she's, while you're setting it up, or you can rely on her just like you should be able to any other good hunting partner. Like this year, there was a couple times I didn't think about it this year. We're packing out my archery elk this year, and I looked over and I was like, did I really put a hind quarter on Katie? Like when we're walking out of this hellhole, and she didn't even say anything, you know, she just put it on and went about her day. So yeah, that's good.
Nice. So it sounds like you got an archery elk this year. So let's get into how your guys' hunting season went this last fall that just ended. So how did that go for you guys?
It was good.
Yeah, it was a good season.
Is that the first kill? of our fall.
Yeah, your archery elk.
So I shot a bull on September 1st or September 2nd or something like that. It was pretty early on. And it was good. You know, I ended up basically it was one of those things. It was just early September, so it was really rough calling and everything else.
Yeah.
And but was able to get one to commit and wasn't really waiting around this year. I knew that Katie still had a tag, or I thought we were actually split up at this point and she was hunting a different drainage, but I just decided to take this bull. It was a younger branch bull, but he came in and got me excited, so I took him. And then and then spent the rest of the September hunting for Katie, and she was a little bit more picky than I would have been.
No, I was not. It was my first archery elk season, and I was willing to shoot anything. It was just that learning experience of when to draw back, what to do, what position to put yourself in. So it was awesome. I had opportunities because Justin's an awesome caller. I just was not able to capitalize this year on that.
And there was some bad luck things, like, you know, the last day of the year, I think we called in like 5 or 6 bulls, right?
Yeah.
And like nice bulls, like 5 or 6 branch antler nice bulls. And it was just a roundabout. A lot of it was just came down to stupid little things. Like one time it was me, you know, I didn't know that the bull could see me. And I went to turn to kind of bugle behind me to get him to look up towards me, or I thought to look up towards me, and he was looking right at me. And so when I went to turn to bugle, he turned and busted down the hill, and Kate was at full draw. He was like 15 yards. I mean, it was, you know, it was my fault. So there was a lot of things that it wasn't just Katie. There was a lot of things that, you know, I did wrong on some of those too. So it's just, I think next season it'll be the archery season four. So
nice. And was that your first season bow hunting, Kate?
Yeah, it was my second season bow hunting. I've gotten a doe with a bow before, but then I did spot and stalk. I did a solo hunt spot and stalk whitetail with my bow, and I got a buck in September. Nice. So that was pretty cool.
Nice. How are you liking the archery hunting thing?
I love it. It's so different. I love it so much. It's up close and personal, and it was awesome getting to see all those bulls come in so close. It's a different experience altogether.
Definitely. Cool. What's your setup? Because that's often something I'm interested in, is like the archer setups, and then you'll find in a good setup for like women shooters who are sometimes, you know, lower poundage and shorter draw lengths can be a little bit tough to find the right broadhead and arrow selection and all that stuff. So what are you shooting?
So I shoot a Matthews Avail, and it's kind of their women's bow, and it's lightweight. I think Justin would shoot it if he could, because it's so quiet and like lightweight. And I shoot a lower poundage. I'm at, I think, 45 pounds, and that's something I need to work on too.
50 now, but yeah.
Nice. And then I was just shooting kudus, the kudu broadheads.
Nice. You had good luck with those?
Yeah.
Kate's had really good luck with them, and I didn't for some reason. But, like, I never lost anything or anything like that. But, you know, I don't want to talk bad about any company, because I do think with a bow, sometimes things just happen. Yeah. But I've heard similar experiences from other people. I double lunged a buck a couple years ago, and he went like 500 feet in elevation uphill. And I was like flabbergasted. I mean, finding lung blood and lots of blood the whole time, but he just went forever. And I had one kind of other weird experience with it. And I just, at that point, I just switched, because I was like, it's probably nothing to do with the broadhead. It's probably just bad luck. But at that point, I'm not risk it again, you know?
Yeah. So what are you shooting now? What's your setup like?
I shoot the Annihilators now.
Okay.
I've gone back and forth between a few different arrow setups. I think I'm shooting the Black Eagle Rampage right now.
Nice.
And I've gone back and forth from shooting like the Easton Axis 4mm, 5mm, and a few other arrows, but the Rampages have just been really like a tough arrow for me. Like every time I shoot something, it just passes through it. The arrow doesn't break, you know. Like my bull this year went straight through both shoulders and just never found the arrow, just kept going, but I'm sure it was intact. Yeah. And I shoot a 70-pound Hoyt, which is my first Hoyt bow. The is it RX3?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
RX3.
So nice. when I go in to get a bow, I just shoot them all. I could care less what the bow is. And it came down to that and the new PSE from 2 years ago. And the PSE was just a little bit more aggressive for me, and I kind of have a bum right shoulder. So the Hoyt was really easy to hold at full draw after messing around with both of them. So I just went with the Hoyt.
Nice. Yeah, there's so many good bows out there. I work at a bow shop, and that's what I try to tell everybody. And it's not like I get why people come in with some sort of like brand loyalty and all that stuff, but it is kind of annoying when I'm trying to tell them like, hey, just shoot every bow, and they won't listen to me.
Yeah. Because you just never, you really never know what's going to shoot best for you. Like, it's like boots. Everyone wants to talk about boots, and it's like, I mean, it might not be right for you. What's right for me? Backpacks are a little more like almost anyone can use it. But, you know, boots are, man, if you, you know, Kennetrex might fit you, but they don't fit me, you know, and it's just, it's not that it's a bad boot. It's just not for me. That's all it is.
Definitely. Definitely. So after archery elk season, what was next for you guys?
So we did archery. Well, I did archery whitetail.
Yeah.
And then we had rifle deer.
Nice.
And we both, was it opening day I tagged out?
No, it was like the second or third day, I think.
And then you tagged out like a week later.
Yeah, mine was closer to the end of the season.
But just
like the 20th.
Justin shot an awesome buck this year.
Nice.
Got lucky. I was actually elk hunting with my brother, and I was calling a bull into him and was laying down on the side of the hill because I was kind of in the wide open, and the bull took like they always do the opposite route that I thought it was going to take. So I was laying down in the wide open trying to get this bull to just peek out of the timber so my brother could shoot it. It was rifle season, and I looked up on the hill like 13-14 yards away. I was like, man, that looks like a big deer. And when I could get out my binos, I started looking at it. I was like, that is a monster buck. But it took 3 or 4 days after that to finally kill him.
Yeah, we watched him for a while.
Yeah, he was just smart. He was in a spot you couldn't, you know, you were either 1400 yards or like 40 yards from him, and it just took a while to get him down.
Nice. And that was a mule deer, or was that whitetail?
Mule deer. Yeah.
Nice. Do you guys mostly hunt? I know up in Idaho you have both, but do you kind of have one that you prefer, either mule deer or whitetail hunting?
We hunt mule deer.
I feel like Katie likes them both. She pretends like she doesn't, but I think she would.
No, whitetail, I'll only hunt whitetail if I can get a second tag.
Yeah.
So the last 2 years I've been able to get a second tag, and I've just gotten a whitetail one. But I like muleys. They're just fun.
Yeah. I just like where you go to get the muleys more than anything.
Definitely. Well, up there, some of those whitetails get up in the mountains too, don't they?
Oh, yeah. And we, you know, Idaho, I don't even like saying it, Idaho's somewhat of a sleeper state for whitetails, though. I don't think we have like as many of them as other places, but you see guys shoot some giant whitetails in Idaho every year, you know. And most of them aren't like here. They'll be, you know, down south or whatever, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely big whitetails around. You just don't, you don't see them as much, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I know you guys are Idaho residents, but the Idaho non-resident tag system has been a big talk the last few years. Do you guys have an opinion on how they're running that system now?
It's it's tough. My stepdad tries to come, he's from Oregon, and Hill tried to come hunt with us in the first couple of years before they switched the system over. He was able to do that, so that was nice. And now, gosh, he can't get a tag to save his life. He's like 60,000th in line, and it makes it tough.
I haven't done it yet. But a lot of my friends have, and everything I've heard sounds that it's kind of a nightmare, and every year something seems to go wrong with the website. So
I think that's their biggest issue is, my stepdad was in line this year and in a good spot, and then the computer froze when he went to check out, and they wouldn't honor the tag. And I think I've talked to a bunch of people that happened to.
Well, and, you know, they had all sorts of problems this year. Like, I heard very credible sources, people were sitting there like in line and went to log their buddy in because their buddy was stuck at work, and it put them in line in front of their spot, you know. And like, because it was like the people that were frozen, it was letting them back in line in front of those people, you know. So And the thing is, like, Idaho Fish and Game comes out every year and they're like, we're sorry, we're working on it. And it's like, they're paying this third party company millions and millions of dollars, you know? They're like, it was unexpected that we got this many people. It's like, why is it unexpected? Every year it's unexpected. So I'm not a non-resident, so it doesn't really affect me, but it is. And it's just, I would be annoyed. Like, I would be really annoyed. So, but to either way, I think the way they look at it is they're getting the money either way. So why spend more money on, you know, something? So,
definitely.
Which is a bummer way to look at it, but that's just fishing game, you know?
Yep. Do you guys have any like ideas on or how you would like to see the non-resident tag system work in Idaho as a resident? Or
it's tough because I don't want change, you know, like, especially because anything that changes with the non-resident is going to change the resident, right? I mean, so I understand that things have to be done. I'm just kind of hoping that it waits a while to do something to the residents, just because, you know, we have this big influx of people, which I feel like is going to be over for a little while. I feel like the housing market's going to downturn and not, you know, not as many people are going to be moving here. We'll see what happens with that. But a lot of people leave when stuff like this happens in Idaho, or leave after a winter or two too. So, but I understand there has to be change, but I really don't want to go to a point system. I enjoy hunting every year, you know, over the counter, but the biggest problem, I don't think the biggest problem is how many tags are in Idaho. It's the amount of predators and everything that we have that have just cut the numbers down to so far.
Well, you know? And we've got some crazy depredation tags that they give out. So you're just slaughtering cows,
and does until, like, you know, the following year and stuff.
Yeah.
Like 6 months out of the year you can hunt them. It's just, that's just really dumb.
Definitely. So,
They tend to play like when they count the elk, like they'll come through and count the elk on, you know, the sides of some of these mountain ranges where they come over from Montana, and they'll count them in the middle of the winter and say, oh, you know, this unit has this many elk. And it's like, no, those are all from Montana. They'll be gone all season, you know?
Yeah.
There's like no elk in that unit that are resident elk anymore. And, you know, so they, you know, fish and game plays its own little tactics and trying not to talk bad about anyone, but it gets frustrating because they act like, you know, the biologists act like people around, you know, in Idaho don't know anything. And it's like, oh, you know, when I was a kid, the thing is, there was more hunters in Idaho when I was a kid and more tags being sold than there is now. What's the difference, right? There's wolves is the biggest difference. Wolves and, you know, unkept predators is the biggest difference. That's why we don't have nearly as many animals as we used to have.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. Let's start about talking about the wolf thing. So you guys are obviously in Idaho, and that's, you know, the big thing right now. Colorado's a big topic as well, but talk about kind of the history of wolves in Idaho and how that changed the landscape and all that.
Well, so wolves were, and it's said both ways, either introduced or reintroduced. Mm-hmm. I'm not from Idaho, but I've talked to a lot of people who are, and most of the people I talk to say wolves were introduced to Idaho, or the Canadian timber wolves were, in 1995 by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. The people from the native Idahoans that I've spoken to say that we did have a native Idaho wolf. And when they brought in the Canadian timber wolves, the Canadian timber wolves wiped out our native wolf here. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother topic in discussion. But
well, and I'll say that 100%. I remember being just like my daughter's age, just a little kid, and being out hunting with my dad, and there was wolves howling in this drainage, and this would have been like the same year that they released the wolves, and this is in a way, way southern part of the state from where they released them, like the opposite end of the state. And and, you know, my dad had seen wolves years and years and years leading up to that. The difference was the wolf that we had here when I was just a kid was like a, you know, like a 70 pound one was a really big wolf, you know. And you couldn't hunt them, and they, you know, they weren't overpopulated. They didn't do very well. I don't know if people were just shooting them. I assume, you know, a lot of people would think they were a coyote and shoot them or something. But, you know, I know, like, I know people that I trust enough, at least in my circle, to know and to have seen myself when I was that young that we for sure had wolves still.
Uh-huh.
But they, you know, came up with this whole plan and introduced the Canadian timber wolf.
And so they were introduced in 1995 by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. I believe they were, I wasn't in Idaho yet, but I believe they were listed in 2009 and you could hunt them starting 2011. They brought these wolves in with the mindset of that Idaho could not sustain a wolf population higher than 500 wolves total. And we had a count come out a couple of weeks ago that was 1,337. Prior to that, it had been, for the last few years, it had been around 1,500. And so what's happening is our ecosystem just can't sustain these wolves. Yeah. And it's extremely hard to manage wolves with hunting and trapping. Left unmanaged, they reproduce, they grow 40% annually. So management's a huge issue, but they waited so long to do it that the wolf population is out of control.
Gotcha. So where was the mistake? Was the mistake the fact that they just reintroduced the wrong type of wolf, that they introduced too many, or that they just reintroduced wolves overall? Like, where was that big mistake there?
I think it's more that they introduced them and then didn't do anything about it for 20 years. You know, gotcha. I mean, like, if you think about putting, like, the example I would give is if you put dogs into Safeco Stadium or something like that with deer and elk in there, just wild dogs, and they started eating the deer and elk and reproducing, what would happen 20 years from then? They'd have nothing left to eat, right?
Yeah,
they would eat themselves to death. And it's just dogs reproduce. They have 6, 10, 12, 14 puppies sometimes, you know, and it's not their fault. It's not the wolf's fault. Like, if an animal runs away from a wolf, they're going to chase it down and they're going to kill it, even if they're not hungry. They're a dog. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. It's not their fault. I think when it comes down to it, I don't think that they ever should have been reintroduced in the first place. We didn't have we didn't have an issue with, we had a good management system. We have bears that take care of plenty of calves and everything during the spring. Yep. You know, we have mountain lions that kill plenty of mule deer and everything else. I just didn't think we had very, you know, the healthiest elk and deer populations that Idaho had ever seen. It wasn't an unhealthy level. I didn't see the need to introduce.
Well, them. And if you think about it, they weren't brought in naturally. So you take these wolves, you drop them in, and it's kind of a shock to the ungulate population. It's a shock to the system. They don't know how to adapt. They don't know what's going on. And it took years and years for the ungulates to adapt to surviving wolves.
Yep.
And so I think that was a problem. Instead of, you know, having them come in naturally, like Colorado already has wolves, and now they're bringing in more for some reason. But
like, you know, on top of that, there's, you know, they didn't, like we said, they didn't do anything about it for 15, 20 years where they even started to do it. And I don't think, to me, you know, and some people might have a different opinion on this, I don't think that it's a coincidence that all of a sudden 4 or 5 years ago when the population, because if you think 40% annually, okay, well, if you start out with 15 dogs, that's not that big of a deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as you get to 1,200, 1,300, 1,500 wolves, it starts to become, I mean, 40% is a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, I think that it's not very, the timing was impeccable that all of a sudden they went from counting them in a helicopter to counting them with trail cameras like 3 or 4 years ago. And all of a sudden the number didn't change for a few years. To me, I think that we had and still do have a lot more wolves than they're saying. I think we have 600 and something trail cameras that count all the wolves in Idaho.
Okay.
I don't think you could count the Frank Church Wilderness with 600 trail cameras.
No,
they're just, you're not going to have them in the right places. Wolves aren't going to run, you know, in the same spot. The two different packs might run the same trail, especially if it's a dividing trail, you know, but you're not going to see, it's just not enough. I know people that have 300 trail cameras, you know, so 600 trail cameras is not a lot of trail cameras
for a state,
for an animal that can run 100 miles in a day. I mean, I just think that I think the timing was impeccable for them to switch from a helicopter to cameras.
But recently they just had some meetings, and I think now they're realizing, okay, it's time to play catch up. What are we going to do here? And I'm sure in the last couple of years, you've seen all over how our wolf hunting laws and trapping laws are getting pretty liberal, which is awesome. Yeah. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, because wolf hunting's so hard, and even trapping, though it's more successful, we're still not putting a dent in it.
Definitely.
And so without some severe management techniques, I don't see it going anywhere aside from the wolves eating all of the game and then dying out due to starvation and disease.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did they allow for you to start hunting wolves? When did that happen?
2011, I believe.
Okay.
I know they opened it up 1 year, shut it down, I think, for a year or two, and then reopened it.
I think it was 2010 they first opened it.
Okay.
Like, exclusively.
And now in Idaho, you can hunt in most units wolves year-round. You can use in some units thermals. You can't hunt with bait yet. I wouldn't be surprised if they open that here shortly.
Yeah.
But that we have a wolf control board, and that they can, through the wolf control board, they can hunt wolves out of plains and use other techniques. The only issue with that is, on average, it costs the wolf control board $9,000 to kill one wolf, and 65% of that is taxpayer dollars. So
yeah,
that's a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a very sustainable plan there financially.
But... No.
All right. So how is the wolf hunting? Has it been somewhat successful in managing the population? Obviously, it's not enough, but has it made much of a difference, you know, as far as bringing the elk and deer populations back up since they've opened up the hunting?
Hunting-wise, no. So in Idaho, less than 1% of hunters will ever successfully harvest a wolf by hunting. And less than 1% of that will do so on purpose. So usually you're out hunting elk and a wolf runs by and you shoot it. So I think we need more people, and I hate saying this, we need more people focusing on wolf hunting, but we also need them to know what they're doing, because you get a lot of people going out to wolf hunt and then they just educate the wolves, and then it makes it harder for the people that know how to do it to get it done. Trapping, it's more successful. I think that's because traps can hunt 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it's still, I'm not seeing, you know, 1,000 wolves get taken out. I think we're lucky in the years the state harvests 400 wolves. Well,
dang. What has been, like, as far as the hunting goes, what tactics are you guys using? What seems to be the most successful? How's that going?
So we drive a lot of roads looking for tracks, because wolves, they have a 250 square mile territory. So they move far, they move fast, and they're extremely intelligent. So we don't ever just pick a spot on a map and say, let's go hike in and see if there's wolves, because it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So usually if we're out hunting other stuff and we see tracks or a lot of sign, we'll go back there to wolf hunt, or we'll drive a lot of roads just looking for tracks before we ever set out.
Yeah, and I think, like, especially for beginners, if anyone does want to get into wolf hunting, there's a lot of, like, fore planning that goes into a wolf. Like, I know, like, one of the best wolf hunters I know averages like 56 days before he shoots one. And, like, that's a lot, right? For the average person, can't afford to go out there and do stuff like that. But his tactic on it, and I think one we've kind of adopted, and a lot of people that you see that are pretty good at it, spend a lot of time before they get a wolf and learning the wolf's habits, like that specific pack, Where do they like to go? Why do they like to go there? What time of the year are they there? And what time of the year are they never there? You know, those types of things are going to cut down if you can learn about that pack before. Like, you could, I always tell people, you could almost, like, don't do this, but you could almost go wolf hunting for like a month to learn about them and never take a gun, because you probably, if you're meaning to try and kill one, you'll probably never get the opportunity. Now, at some point during that, you might just stumble into one and get them, you know. But like when Katie says we go drive roads, like I'll be driving fast in one spot and we'll specifically go to a section of a road, you know, where I know that the wolves like to go down, run that portion of the road before they cut drainages or whatever it is, you know. And that's just stuff that you learn, you know. You can't, like, I can't tell people about that specific pack or whatever, because then they'll show up and educate that pack, because people do that in general now anyways. They'll start to realize that one little tidbit. They'll show up to where wolves cross the thing or whatever, and they'll start howling from their truck with the lights on, with the wolves 300 yards away staring at them, you know, and like those wolves are gone, you know, like they're never coming back to that road again, you know. You really have to, like, you really, I always say you have to make really good on your opportunity. Like, if you call two wolves, then you better kill both of them, you know, and that might be a little bit harsh or whatever, but if not, you know, you might never get a chance at that pack again. That's just, they're incredibly smart. You just really have to make good on your opportunities.
Definitely.
And, I was just going to say, we've had, you know, our own failures, and that's how we learned, was through all of our mistakes. But that's what we're hoping to accomplish with this class, that we can educate people and kind of cut the years of time and failure down to, so they can be more successful.
For the class, I mean, between us and Tom, we've probably, you know, I don't even know the amount of mistakes that we've had between the three of us on, and the amount of missed opportunities. And that's the biggest thing. If you can just cut those out to start with, I mean, you're going to be more successful than I have ever been, just because you'll know everything that I didn't know.
Definitely. Well, tell people about this class that you guys have coming up and what it entails and all that stuff.
Yeah. So we are putting on the Western Wolf Academy. It's going to be July 6th through the 9th. It's going to be in Cascade, Idaho, on this 200-acre private ranch. We have teamed up with Tom Snyder from Stuck in the Rut. For those that don't know who that is, he's just a wolf killer. He's phenomenal. And he's up in northern Idaho. And we teamed up because we've been friends for a few years, and we talk quite a bit about our techniques with each other. And we realize how differently we hunt wolves, because we're in different terrain. And so with this class, you kind of get how he hunts wolves in the more timbered country, and how we do it in the more open country. And we're going to go over different wolf howls and kind of their dialect and what different things mean and how to react in certain situations. We're going to go over wolf behavior and their patterns. And then part of it, because we are on this, it's this big guest ranch, we wanted to make it sort of like a retreat. So there's going to be plenty of time to relax and fish in the lakes there. And there's some archery targets and things like that. And we're planning on having a couple of air guns there to practice quick hunting scenarios and hunting shots, because with wolves, oftentimes you have a millisecond and you better get a shot off. And so it should be an awesome time. We're really excited about it. And we're going to have some prizes and little raffle giveaways, but hopefully it just brings that education piece to help people close that gap.
Nice. If somebody wants to go to this course, how can they get involved in that?
So they can either message Tom or I on Instagram or Facebook, or email me at katesmalloutdoors@gmail.com.
Gotcha. And then what's the pricing on that for people interested?
So it's $1,800 for the 3 days. Lodging's included. All meals are included. And then you also get, we're going to have a wolf kit with the new wolf howler from Phelps, a few distress calls, and we're putting some more things in this kit. We're still working on it. And then you also get a free membership to Tom Snyder's Wolf Masterclass. Okay. So any information, you know, it's 3 days. It's a lot packed in with a lot of information. So with his class, you can go on and go through all the modules and you'll always have that at your fingertips if you forget something. And I think his class runs about $500, the online one.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Yeah. It sounds like a great, great class for anybody interested in getting started wolf hunting for sure. But
yeah, we're excited.
Definitely. Definitely. When you guys are out hunting, are you guys using, is it mostly calling that you guys are doing to find wolves, or how does that work? So what you guys said, you're driving and finding tracks. Once you find those tracks,
so
kind of where do you go from there?
We will glass a lot. We're timbered and wide open. If we're in the wide open, we're obviously just glassing. Mm-hmm. But if it's timbered country we're hunting, we howl to locate.
Okay.
And sometimes that works. Sometimes they give you a howl back. Sometimes they come in silence. But usually if they're further off, we howl to locate before we just dive in.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Is it similar, like, strategies to, like, elk calling in a sense?
Not really. No. I mean, like, there's some things that – there's some examples, like Katie just said, that I would give. Like, you know, one can come in silent on you pretty easy, you know. Like, mm-hmm. they could howl way off. You could howl back. They could not howl, and you could think, oh, you know. It's not like a bull where – when they're in the heart of it, they're going to be screaming their entire way in, you know. Also, it feels way different because they can cover an insane amount of ground, you know. Like, for an elk, the first wolf that I ever shot, people think I'm lying, I think, when I say this, but it ran like 3,000 yards in snow that it would take me and you. It took me, when I walked out to get Kate's elk or wolf, like 400 yards. It took me like 30 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And that snow, and I swear it ran across that lake in like 5 minutes. Like, it was the most insane thing I've ever seen. Just sprinted 3,000 yards, never slowed down, never, you know. It was, you know, they're just a different animal. So it's not like calling in a bull where you hear it and you can maybe make a move, and maybe you can. They might just sit down. Like, if you've ever called a coyote, sometimes they'll sit there and howl, you know, and stare mm-hmm. at you, and a wolf can do the same thing. But there's definitely a lot more, they're harder to read what exactly they're gonna do unless you're watching them, you know. You can bed up wolves. Like, I have a friend that's local to us that's really good at, like, finding, and he knows where they're gonna bed. Like, he'll bed down wolves, you know, and then he'll move in mm-hmm. on them and get a shot. And, you know, I've rarely had that happen where I had the opportunity to do it, and every time I got there they were gone. But he's really good at it, you know. So there's a lot of different tactics besides just calling that you can use.
And it depends on the time of year, because their behavior changes as well. So February is their mating season, and that's when I like to hunt them best, because they're vocal and they're territorial. And so that's, I found, like, we've had pretty good luck in February. But when you talk to Tom, he likes to hunt them in August. Okay. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. And so that's why I'm excited about this course, because you get kind of every different perspective.
Gotcha. When you do call in a wolf, is it most time, like, is the whole pack coming in, or does one break off, or how does that work?
It really just depends.
Yeah, it just depends on the situation. Sometimes you only see one or two when they're out scouting for food. But we've had situations where we've found the whole pack and they've come in.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, and you can see, like, if you even look on YouTube, you'll see, like, different videos. There's not a ton of them, so they're easy to find, but, like, you'll see some where, like, you know, somebody calls the whole pack in. And normally, I think more than anything, what it is people like to use the terms like scout and stuff like that, and I just haven't really seen anything like that. To me, wolves are, like, as much as they are kind of a like, they work together and as a pack and stuff, especially as wolves are getting a little more independent from the pack, they'll you know, run off for a day or two and they'll meet back up with the pack, because it's so easy for them to follow trails and stuff like that, you know. They'll find where their pack is. Mm-hmm. So every once in a while, you know, you might just run into one by itself, and it might be a solo wolf that's completely by itself, or it might be a wolf that just ran from the pack for a little bit. Your best chance of calling in more than one is if there's more than one to call in. I shot two in the Frank like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And I called those in, and there was just two of them, and they were together when they were coming through, and I called them in and they came in together, but there was only two of them, you know. That's just, and they were off. I'm sure that the female was denned up and they were, you know, bringing back food to regurgitate for or whatnot, but there was only two of them there, and I'm sure the other ones went a different direction, and that's just how it goes. And if there was more of them, I think they all would have came in because of how far in I was on that. But
the day we doubled up, we were watching a whole pack of them. Justin's came in first, charging us because it was mating season. Uh-huh. And it came in. He shot at 46 yards, and it was drooling and barking. It was coming after us. And about an hour and a half later, mine came in, and they just slowly, gosh, it took like 30 minutes. We were watching it.
Kate got frostbite on her hand from having her hand out of the glove for 10 minutes, you know.
So. Yeah. And that jet one just slowly came in. And so they kind of, while the rest of the pack, we were still watching, and they were just kind of doing their own thing. So I think it depends on the time of year, the age of the wolf, and how wised up it is to hunters.
Yeah. Definitely. Have you guys had any like close calls? I mean, 46 yards is close enough, but have you had anything closer than that, or where it got a little questionable?
There was a time. So before I had ever even really hunted wolves, I was archery hunting. This was probably like 2013 or 14 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the first time, if you ever, most people don't get to, I guess, but if you ever get the chance to smell a wolf, they have a very distinct smell. And I didn't know what wolves smelled like, but I walked into this little, like this bull had been screaming. And so I was running basically down the drainage to cut the distance on this bull, because I knew he was working up the drainage with his cows, and he kind of shut up. And so I was thinking maybe he bedded early and in a weird kind of a different spot today, maybe just because of pressure or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went running in, and I was about probably 150 yards from where I thought he was. And all of a sudden I smelled this crazy smell, and just like unlike anything I'd ever smelled in the forest, but I didn't think too much of it. And the bull wasn't talking anymore or anything else. And like right before this, I thought I had heard some crashing, but you know, elk are loud in general.
Yeah.
And so I let out a couple of cow calls and was just trying to get him to scream so I could scream back, and nothing, you know. Minute or two goes by, I let out a couple more soft cow calls, nothing. And I just had this like overwhelming feeling, like sometimes you just are freaking yourself out when you're out in the woods, you know, like something's watching you. I had this overwhelming feeling that something was watching me, and I just kind of like was still thinking it's an elk, you know, like a cow backdoored me or something. So I'm slowly turning my head around or whatever, and I look up, and I've gotten a couple charcoals and stuff, I've never gotten a black wolf. And I look up to my right, and like 30 yards away, 25 yards away, it's pretty thick. There's this big black wolf, big old like mame looking thing and everything, yellow eyes just staring down at me, just like staring a hole right through me, you know? And I was just like, oh, and I have no tag, nothing like that. You know, I just start staring back at this thing, just in this intense stare off for like probably what felt like an hour. It was probably like a minute, you know, it was still a long time. And this thing kind of turned and trotted off, and it was just an absolute monster of a wolf. It was huge, and it kind of ran off and went up, and I looked down, and all the wolves were just filing underneath me, just staring right up at me. And it was just the creepiest thing, you know, like if I had had a tag that day, I'd probably have shot 5 or 6 wolves. Jeez. And that's a good lesson for people too, is people would be like, oh, I might buy a tag this year. It's like, if you're a resident, they're $10.
Well,
you have 10 of them in your
that's
pocket.
What I tell anyone that comes to Idaho, have a wolf tag in your pocket. It does. Yeah. I think non-residents, they're like just over $30.
But we met a kid, I think it was last year at the expo, that had shot a wolf. He was out elk hunting with a rifle, shot a wolf, shot two actually, I think, but he could have shot like 8. But he only had 2 tags. And so I always tell people, I'm like, yeah, it's an $80 investment.
Wouldn't you rather have that many tags? Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I've only been up to Idaho once, didn't have a successful hunt just overall for a spring bear hunt, but I definitely made sure I had a wolf tag in my pocket, and so did my hunting partner. So, and yeah, they're not very expensive for non-residents. I think it was $40 or less.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, maybe you're not going to have eight if you're a non-resident or whatever. I totally understand all that. But, you know, at the same time, it's a wolf is really a once in a lifetime animal. So you might as well at least have a couple of them if you're going to come hunt here in general. You've already spent the money.
Yeah, for sure. What kind of like shots are you guys usually getting on wolves? Are they pretty close up, or does it tend to be a little bit further shots, or how does that usually play out?
They're all different for us depending on the terrain.
Most common is a long shot, like
the
most, I mean, we that and that's something that not from like misses or anything, but maybe we haven't capitalized on, but like normally it's that's kind of why I got in one of the reasons I got into long range shooting was because of wolves. And I can tell you that if I could have made shots that I could now, I would have twice the amount of wolves previous to a few years ago. Just because I would always see them at like 1,000 yards and wouldn't have a rifle, you know, or even if I had my rifle, it wouldn't have mattered type of a deal, or even 500-600 yards. I've seen them a bunch of times, but normally it's, I would say for most people and it depends. Like if you're up north where it's super thick, you're probably not going to be taking, I mean, and maybe like they have little openings and stuff, so if you can catch them right,
I would say toms are probably less than 100 yards.
Less, ours are normally like 500 plus for the most part. It seems like we've shot most of ours actually under that, but I would say the most opportunities for a normal person are going to be 500 to 1,000 yards.
Gotcha. What kind of guns are you guys using? Like what's your go-to wolf gun?
We've been liking the Seven Somme recently.
Seven Somme. You know, you can shoot anything that you shoot good is always what I tell people. Yeah. Like the gun that you shoot the best. Wolves have this, you know, everyone thinks that if you shoot them, you have to shoot them with like a 300 rum. And I do shoot a 300 Norma a lot, but it's not because I think that'll kill it. It's more like, you know, the wind not pushing that bullet around as much and stuff like that than it has to do with whatever you shoot the best. I mean, you know, when they're in a trap, I shoot them with a 22 and they die instantly.
You shot one with a 6.5 Creed. I've shot one with the 308.
That double that I was talking about with the 6.5 284.
Wherever you can hit them in the lungs, just like any animal, you know. Bigger the round, of course, you're going to do more damage to the pelt, which stinks, but whatever you're comfortable shooting, they're tough animals. I shot with a 308 and it ran 400 yards and I hit it in the lungs and
hit it in the heart. Sometimes, but you know, like we were saying earlier, we were talking about broadheads at the very beginning of this, you know, sometimes sometimes animals have a crazy will to live or something just minute happens and they run a lot further. But I mean, really whatever you shoot the best is probably what you should be shooting.
Definitely. What rifles are you guys shooting and optics and all that? What's your like overall setup?
I work for a company called Divide Gun Company. It's a custom rifle company. So I shoot a custom rifle normally paired with, you know, I've found that there's a lot of good optic companies out there. I'm not going to knock any of them. Zeiss normally has like the best tracking of anyone that we've tested. Like overall, their scopes just track extremely well. And I pair it with their binos too, their range finding binoculars that does all the ballistic stuff too. So that's normally the setup that I run for me personally.
And then one thing that's really come into play for us are suppressors when you're wolf hunting. It's just huge. The wolves, if it's in a pack and you shoot one, they're not looking at you where that big blast came from. They're looking at the wolf you just shot because that sounds usually louder of the bullet hitting the wolf than it coming out of the gun.
Yeah, like if there's a group of wolves and I could make the bet, like I would shoot the furthest one back because 90% of the time they're going to run towards you looking back at that one that just got shot, you know.
Okay.
Because that impact noise is normally always louder than your gun going off, especially if you're at any kind of a distance, like further than 100 yards.
And we use AB suppressors because they're extremely lightweight and they've just worked really well for us.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, a suppressor is definitely on the list of things for me to get for my hunting rifle. I hear nothing but good things about hunting with a suppressor. So
yeah, once you do it, you will not go back.
No, yeah, we didn't, 2 years ago is when we first started hunting with the suppressors.
I went out with this guy, actually the guy I work for now, and I went out with him and he was like, I got to warn you, man, once you shoot a suppressor, you won't go back. And I was like, oh no, like it doesn't really bother me. And like that day I was like, yeah, I'm never shooting a gun that's not suppressed again.
Nice. Well, we've had this big discussion about wolves and all this stuff, and I know this is going to be a really loaded question, but to kind of wrap things up here, what is, in your opinion, kind of what is the solution? What steps do we need to start making to get wolves under control in Idaho? And then if Colorado goes the way things are going, eventually you're going to have to control them in Colorado as well. So what do we need to do here?
Oh, man, we need to hunt them more successfully, which is hard.
Yeah.
Like I said, Fish and Game now is doing a better job of, they realize they wolves really need to be managed. I won't be surprised if in the future we see them take more drastic measures.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you know, we can talk until we're blue in the face about what they should do to manage the wolves. And mm-hmm. I honestly think that will figure itself out. As I think the biggest thing in my eyes that needs to be done is more people need to stand up and be like, look, you know, those elk numbers aren't right because you're, you know, doing them at this time of the year. More people need to stand up to Fish and Game, and Fish and Game's just like any other government entity, right? They're supposed to work for us. They're supposed to be us, you know, they're not supposed to work against us. And I just don't know many people in Idaho, like I don't mind wolves, you know, like I say it all the time. I respect wolves probably more than most people could ever understand. And I don't necessarily want the wolves gone. I'd like a chance to hunt them still. But the problem is we're just not really set up for them here. And I think until people stand up and are like, hey, this is wrong, you know, this was wrong from the beginning and we need to do something about it, I think that's the biggest thing. I think taking care of the wolves, they'll figure it out. They'll start to hire third parties with helicopters that are actually going to go out and kill wolves rather than shooting like one or two out of a pack and flying away like Fish and Game does. You know, I think the more people stand up, that problem will take care of itself. I think the biggest issue now is everyone just kind of doesn't say anything about it.
So, yeah, I would say comment on all the wolf management plans that come out in your state. Whether that's Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, hopefully Colorado will
write the director, write your legislation.
Yeah. You know. And then in Idaho and Montana, we have an awesome program called the Foundation for Wildlife Management. And that nonprofit reimburses wolf hunters and trappers a certain amount of money, depending on the unit you're in and the state you're in, for any legal wolf harvest. And so that's more incentive. You know, trappers spend a ton of money out there on gas and their supplies, and it's expensive wolf hunting as well. Yeah. And so it's incentive to get people out. If you aren't going to wolf hunt or aren't going to wolf trap, but you want to see your ungulate population live and continue on, and you want to be able to still hunt elk and deer, then I'd say donate to causes like that.
Yeah, definitely. What other organizations are out there that people should be kind of taking part in or donating to?
Really not just wolves, but any predator. Yeah. There's the Houndsmen's Association.
Trappers Association. Like there's a lot of associations out there that even if they're not wolf specific, they're out there fighting for trapping rights and stuff like that. Cause that's the thing. Trapping rights are under attack every day, you know, and you have these anti-hunters with just endless amounts of money that are just going to keep creating lawsuits. And unfortunately there's only people like us that are going to pay to, you know, get them reversed. So
and not only that, but just any hunter out there, while you know you might live in a state that doesn't have a wolf problem or doesn't have a bear problem, I think as hunters we need to come together more as a group, because we lose any bit of hunting, it's just a little bit of leeway for those anti-hunters to come after whatever you like to hunt.
Definitely
Cool. Well, thanks guys for coming on. I definitely appreciated it. Learned a ton. I think we got a good message out for people to hopefully raise some awareness about the wolf management and all that stuff that needs to happen. But before I let you go, one question that I ask everybody is for a book recommendation. So is there one that you guys have and you guys can, if there's.
We'll do it together because I know Justin has a really good book he's going to say.
Okay.
I always normally when people ask me for a book recommendation, I always say Undaunted Courage is a great book to read.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've heard that one a few times, not necessarily on the podcast, but just people in general recommending it. So definitely one that I need to check out. But Kate, is there one that you have?
I'd go with that one too.
That one?
So, that's where I was like, I know he's going to say it. So.
Right. Cool. Well, before I let you guys go, tell people how they can find you and then all the information for your academy that you have coming up again.
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram at Kate_small_outdoors. And you can get a hold of me for the Western Wolf Academy at katesmalloutdoors@gmail.com.
And then I'm just, don't contact me about the wolf stuff, contact Katie. I'm terrible about getting back to people, but it's just Justin period small period outdoors. Justin Small Outdoors, basically.
On Instagram.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks for coming on. Is there anything else we want to touch on before I let you go?
I don't think so. How about you? Anything left?
I think I'm good on my end. So I appreciate
you. Definitely learned a ton
on my end about the wolf stuff, and hopefully some other people do as well. And maybe we'll get more people out there wolf hunting or just interested in wolf management.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you having us.
No problem.
Thank you. You as well.
Got it. Bye.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast with Justin and Kate. I know I certainly did. Definitely learned a ton about wolves and the history of the wolf reintroduction in Idaho and some of the management plans that they have in place for that. Again, make sure you guys are sharing this podcast as much as you can. Wolves are definitely a hot topic right now, especially in states like Colorado where they're planning on reintroducing them. So if you guys like hunting elk and deer and all the ungulates like that, wolf will crush that population for you. Even if you're not a wolf hunter, you definitely want to be proactive on the wolf management plan. So share this podcast as much as you can. Let's get the word out about that. But before I let you guys go, check out the podcast on social media. It's Barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Again, give the podcast a like, a follow, a share. All those things help. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll see you guys on the next one.